all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We also want to thank our latest national sponsor, Veteran Lending Council. It is a community dedicated to educating lenders, realtors, and veterans on the VA Home Loan Benefit Program. You can check them out on Facebook and other social media outlets. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today, Rich Castenga. Rich is a Marine. He served from 2008 to 2012. He had some interesting times over in Afghanistan, and what we're going to talk to him about today also is his instructor role for the Marine Special Operations Command, or MARSOC. And I don't ever think we've spoken to somebody on Veterans Radio about MARSOC. So, Rich, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, sir. Good to be on.
So how did a nice guy like you end up in the Marines back in 2008?
So going back to 2007, I was playing some football in college. Freshman year, ended up blowing a shoulder out. Sophomore year, blew a knee out, and after that it was, hey, scholarship's gonna get cut. I always had intentions of joining the military, but I had an ACL surgery in 2007, and a friend of mine, we were just talking, and we ended up both enlisting, going on the buddy program. I wanted to go to the officer route first, that's why I was in college, but I actually wanted to fly planes in the Navy. Never got that opportunity, so I figured what was the best thing but to enlist in the Marine Corps.
Well, I've been chasing Rich for a month or more now to get him on to talk about MARSOC. And he contacted me today and said, hey, Jim, today would be a great day. I'm off work a little bit. He works. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But he said, I blew my ACL out, and I'm on leave while we figure this out. So is it the same knee or a different knee than you blew out in college?
So different knee than college, but however, this will be the third ACL surgery since 2008. I blew the same knee. The one I blew on Thursday here, I blew back in 2017 in a relatively good foot pursuit into an arrest, and blew the knee out, but still caught the guy, thank God. And just the other day, another bad guy with a gun, and he decided to throw a chop block at me trying to avoid the arrest and blew the knee backwards. And so I'm on round three of ACL surgery.
Well, you're getting to be a pro at this, and I'm not sure that's anything anybody should be a pro at. Well, I got sidetracked a little bit. So you got in 2008. As I mentioned at the outset, just served until 2012. One of your assignments, rotations, was over in Afghanistan. Can you give us a thumbnail about that with the 1st Battalion, 2nd Marines?
Yeah, yes. I was 1-2 Charlie Company, 3rd Platoon. At the time, I was a Lance Corporal, designated to an assistant squad leader role. We were over in Musikala at that time. third platoon, we were kind of down in the valley. We had Route Black and Route Dick. We were in the what we called the green zone, where all the poppy and opium fields were. One day our command came down and said, hey, we're going to go on a three-day op. And we all knew the second you came out, our compound sat on the east side of Route Black. And we knew the second we went out to Route Black, if you went 20 meters north, you were getting contact, no questions asked. So we're like, hey, we're going to come out to Route Black. We're going to punch north, three-day op, push it up to the FLET, the forward line of enemy troops, and push the contact kind of deal. So everyone kits up. We get out probably about 25 meters into north on Route Black. We get our first contact. We were kept pushing. We were in it for about 8 hours. We were just bounding between 1st and 2nd platoon and 3rd platoon, pushing north. Get to a certain point, come up across a canal. We had to get into the canal, come out of the canal. And we had a building off southwest west of where we were. I believe it, on our map, it was building 8-3. And the platoon sergeant goes, hey, third squad, I need you guys to take over building 8-3, bed down for the night, set up 50% security. So we had to get back over another canal to get to this building. I actually had 4 ANA, Afghan National Army guys, attached to my team. So I go the first one to get across because we have not cleared this building yet. Get across, and there was just like one solo tree on the canal that I could just reach to get myself to pull myself up. So I decided to stay there, hold security, and stay on that tree so I could help the other guys get out faster to get up to the building. So get my 7 guys across. My buddy, who's normally number 2 or number 3 in the stack, ends up being number 1 on the stack because I had to rotate out and stay on that tree. We get through the compound wall. We go to take the door. My one man steps on a pressure plate. Both of us catch the brunt of the blast there on foot. And it's almost comical, but I remember going in the air, and in my head, I'm replaying the Ricky Bobby scene from Talladega Nights when he goes, I'm in the air. This isn't good. Like, I remember saying that to myself. And it actually ended up putting me back. The blast was so big, it actually threw me back over the compound wall into the canal. So at that time, obviously, shock is set in. At the time, didn't know injuries, but sustained a lot of injuries. And I was drowning. Next thing I know, Lance Corporal Nolan and Doc Helton, I had one of them on each side. They were pulling the straps on my flak, and they pulled me up enough to where I can get my head out of the water, finally catch some air, and they dragged me up back behind the compound wall. That IED blast initiated a firefight. So we had the Scout Sniper team with us as well. They start laying down what they had to lay down because they had to get a bird in to medevac myself and my buddy Lance Corporal Griffin at the time. I believe I took 3 auto injectors of morphine. Doc goes to fire on a tourniquet, and what my guys learned after my injury is they stopped wearing their tourniquets up on their shoulders because between the sun and in and out of the water and the sweat, it dry rotted the tourniquets. So where that plays in the role to me is they're throwing that Cat 2 on me. I suffered a femoral artery injury. It actually severed. So they're spinning the tourniquet on when they're hitting the spindle. The first tourniquet ended up snapping because it was dry rotted. It was on my shoulder. So another doc comes over, Doc Helton at that time. So Doc Lane and Doc Helton come over. They get a tourniquet on me. I remember Lance Corporal Downs. He had his knee up in my groin area, just throwing every bit of pressure he could up on that artery. And then in the midst of this, I actually got shot twice because of the firefight that I didn't find out till a day later when I woke up in the at Camp Leatherneck. But so I got a tourniquet on. Corporal Downs got a knee in my groin, and then Doc Helton's got his hands in there trying to grab a femoral artery to stop some bleeding there. So finally, they were able to get a medevac unit in, bring the helo in, obviously a hot LZ to get me on the gurney. Well, as they're carrying me to the helo, my squad leader was on my top left side, like where my head is. Well, go figure. His 3-point sling on his buttstock, the sling unraveled. His buttstock swings down, smacks me in my face, and that's what decided to knock me out finally. his buttstock cracking me in the head. Next thing I know, I woke up on the helo. They flew us down into Camp Leatherneck for immediate medical treatment, obviously to a higher echelon of care. I'm here talking to you today because Lance Corporal Griffin is unable to. He succumbed to his injuries about halfway to Camp Leatherneck. He lost both legs and both arms instantly upon the IED blast, which he took probably 90% of the blast off of me, which ultimately ended up saving my life. Every year, I still make the trek out to Arlington where he is buried every April 1st. I've been there since 2010, for the exception of 2020, which is kind of heartbreaking being COVID and the pandemic. Arlington was shut down. I couldn't be there for the 10-year anniversary, but I still roger up with probably four guys still show up, and Tyler's parents are there every year, and we go to that gravesite every year, and I just thank God that I'm still here. I take my kids there. Still too young to understand, but one day they will, but yeah, they at least come with me, and it's good for Tyler's parents to see the kids. And so I had twin boys. The gentleman that passed was Tyler Owen Griffin. So I have Lorenzo Owen and Luca Tyler are my sons. So their middle names mirror his name.
Well, unfortunately, we have too many of these stories on Veterans Radio, and I always like to have the name of the officer or the enlisted men here, the Lance Corporal, who essentially gave his life to save yours. So where was Lance Corporal Tyler Owen Griffin from?
He was from Voluntown, Connecticut. He was the only second person, to Voluntown's knowledge, he was the only second KIA in a war since like the inception of the United States of America. He was one of the only kids, I believe, that actually enlisted from his high school. And then shortly thereafter, the incident, his parents ended up having to leave. They wanted to leave Voluntown. I guess it was too hard for them to stay in the town. It was a very small, typical American town, not that many people, and I think it was too hard for them. So they ended up just moving down to Florida, probably for better peace of mind for themselves. But Voluntown, Connecticut is where Tyler was from.
Well, we want to remember him. Rich and I have a mutual friend who said, you got to talk to this guy because he is the luckiest, unlucky guy I've ever met. And you've just heard some of the unlucky things that happened to him in Afghanistan and the lucky things that happened along the way to keep him alive and keep him here today. What year was that, Rich?
So that that incident occurred April 1st of 2010.
So as listeners, you might imagine, Rich came back. He had to have all kinds of surgeries done to him to kind of put the pieces back together, which they did, and returned to the Marine Corps, his battalion. And the next lucky thing happened. He gets a call out of the blue from his commanding officer, who's sitting with Marine Special Operations Command officers, who are saying, hey, we've got this interesting role we need filled, and we think Rich Castanga may be the guy. So tell us how you ended up in MARSOC.
So I was in my bunk there, get a call from my CO, and I'm guessing it was a joke they were attempting to play on me, which ended up being a pretty good one. But CO called, seemed pretty jacked off, and just simply said, hey, I got a captain and a staff sergeant from MARSOC standing in my office about you. You need to get down to HQ right now. So I'm reverting back, like, all right, where was I on leave this weekend? Or what did I do something on a 9-6? And couldn't think of anything. So the first thing I did was bust out a quick shave, make sure it was clean and cut in case I was going to go get NJP'd or yelled at. So cleaned up, got my butt down there to HQ, got into my CEO's office, and basically he wanted to sound mad because there was an opportunity to present itself. Somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody said I would be a good role for an instructor over at MARSOC. The captain and staff sergeant said, hey, would you like to do this? I obviously jumped at the opportunity and got to go over to MARSOC over at Stones Bay and be an instructor. I got to do tactical air nav, got to do some LTT stuff with those guys, CQB training.
Hang on. I'm going to have you explain all that. But before we get there, Rich, most folks don't know what MARSOC is. And as I said, it's the Marine Forces Special Operations Command. And it came about in 2006, when DOD kind of put out the word that every component's going to give something here to Special Operations Command, and hey, Marine Corps, you don't have anybody, so stand this up so that you can give them to us. There's a rich history here that we want to talk about too. But this was sort of a new opportunity, wasn't it? What was it, 2011 when they approached you? This was early on.
Yeah, so it would have been early in 2011. The injury date, like I said earlier, was April 1, 2010. I spent, I think, 4.5 months over at Bethesda, Maryland, at the Naval Hospital there at Walter Reed. 32 surgeries later, I was finally able to get discharged and go home for a little bit, and then eventually got back down to 1-2. But, when that opportunity arised, I jumped at the bit, and truth be told, if I wouldn't have been, I'm not going to say forced, but given the option of a medical retirement, I would have done my bare minimum 20. I absolutely love the Marine Corps. I love MARSOC being over there with those guys. I thought that was my calling and I wanted to be there forever, but injuries kind of had me part ways with the military, which I still regret, but don't, because now I wouldn't have met my now wife, had my 3 kids, and I'm very happy where I am, and we can Monday morning quarterback all day, but more of the stories, I loved where I was and I wanted to stay, just wasn't allowed.
Yeah. And again, life moves on, but we learn a lot of lessons and we make a lot of friends, and we gain a lot of skill set along the way. And you certainly have. The MARSOC has now been able to change its name, if you will, back to Marine Raiders. Can you explain a little bit about the history and significance of that change?
So back in the day, pre the 2006 era you just spoke about, there was the MARSOC and it was the Marine Corps Raiders a while back. Now that name must have caught some attention of in a negative way, so they went away with that name. So whenever MARSOC got reinstated, the Marine Corps Raider was actually not allowed to be or was not used. So when I was over there, everyone was more or less blanketed an O370, and then your O371s was basically anyone that was an officer. It was a generalized MOS field. Now back in 20 tail end of 14 into 15, they readopted the name the Marine Corps Raiders. They are also, they got their own pins now for camis and uniforms and whatnot, which was not in existence when I was there at the end of 11 and, or I'm sorry, at the beginning of 11 till 12, till I got separated, that was not there. But that was the significance of the name change. And we're, like I said, I believe it was just a bad rap early in the 1960s and 70s is when that name went away, but they at least got it reinstated. They were always fighting for it. It's good for them for getting it back.
Well, it's got a lot of history and it has come and gone a couple of times. It was in use in 1942 to 1944 in World War II and then went away. And again, some of this is, Raiders got a bad name, maybe a context to some people, but part of it too is the Marine Corps is an elite group. Does it need an elite group inside the elite group? So there's always been some discussion about that. And so when in 2000, and I think it was 5 or 6, when Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld said, hey, You know, we need a component from the Marines here. This kind of got reactivated. And so, again, a lot of history. Talk to us about the kind of training that you were mentioning a minute ago, that the Marines are the elite. This is the elite to the elite. What additional training do these guys get who are Marine Raiders at the time that you were in MARSOC?
So not going too far into some stuff, to be honest. I'm not entirely sure what's still classified, what's still not classified. Now, you can say the Marine Corps is the elite group right now. At least on my side of the house, when I was infantry, everyone had to go through land navigation. And when you're going through land navigation, everyone's got their map, their compass, and you know, you're trying to find that little ammo can out in the middle of Camp Lejeune or Camp Geiger, wherever you're at. Just to take that, you know, if those are your elite guys, now you take the elite guys, i.e. MARSOC, Recon, all those cats. But hey, you're going to have a map, a protractor, you still got to find that box, but you can't get caught, which means you can't be simply just walking down a path and, you know, following your azimuth and reverse and all that stuff. So you have to just kind of take it a step further. And that's the way I look at it, is everyone has the basics. And as long as if you're phenomenal at the basics and that's all you know, you're always going to be eligible or be able to go to that next elite spot. And that kind of transforms into the world where I am now, in the LE side of the house. You could say everyone at the DEA, the FBI, hey, those are all your elite guys, right? They're federal cops. Like, those are the best. Well, within those groups, you have more elite groups. Like, you have your SWAT guys. You have your phenomenal undercover guys who embed themselves with different criminal organizations. So that there is a bar that does separate elite from within the so-called elite. But as far as like your land nav, your close course combat, even your medical, like everything's taken a step higher, and you're just held to a higher standard. And the best part is that I've always found everyone who is in a specialized field, whether it was Marines, MARSOC, Navy, Navy SEALs, those guys that are in those more elite groups, those are the guys that want to be there. So now you're surrounded by everyone who does want to do what you're doing, i.e. to the infantry. You know, you have 1,000 guys in a battalion. You know, you have some people that simply joined for the healthcare, some people that joined to get out of a bad home life, or someone to get out to get a paycheck every 2 weeks, which is all good and grand. Hey, you signed that contract, good for you. But when you take it a step further, now you have guys like, well, hey, I want to do CQB. I want to learn tactical NF. I want to learn foreign weapons. I want to learn demo. So you're surrounded by more, I want to say, an all-star group, and everyone has the same goals, and that just pushes everyone to be better. When you're just in a generalized field, that's kind of hard to come by.
Absolutely.
I've always lived by the thing you are, i.e. like myself, I'm a combination of my 5 closest people I keep in my circle. So out of my 5 friends, I take all their best personal attributes and I become that. So you take that into a specialized unit, whether it's LE or law enforcement, now you're trying to be the best gunfighter out of this guy. You want to be a better medic than that guy. You want to be a better RTO than that guy. You want to be better shaped than the guy that's in the best shape. You take all those attributes and that forms you.
And when you went over to instruct and they specifically searched you out for this, was there a specific area that you did instruction in, Rich?
So my main wheelhouse, I was a CQB guy. I love that. And I still actually teach that to this day. I'm on a SWAT team now where I get to throw in my 2 cents to kind of break up the LE side of the house, just to give them more food for thought kind of thing. But I've always taken a thing to CQB and medic stuff. I got to go to the LTT school, or DMOC, I believe that's what they're calling it now. And that's actually the training I received there kind of saved me here. I'd say in the last 3 months, I was actually in a car crash back in January, working with our mutual friend Todd. I was, again, unlucky, luckiest guy in the world. Driving the road, I get T-boned. Someone pulling out of a gas station during a surveillance detail. So this T-bone knocks me into oncoming traffic. And then I go head on with another vehicle. All I can hear is that lady screaming, I'm on blood thinners, I'm on blood thinners, I'm bleeding. I was able, I had to crawl my back seat because my whole front end crumbled. I had to crawl my back seat, kick my way out of my passenger side door. Still had my team bag, actually, not the same contents, but still had my team bag from overseas, the team IFAC. So I grab it. I ran over, just second nature, you know, tourniquet, threw an Israeli bandage on her, not thinking anything crazy. Well, then I had a boss, a supervisor, a local PD guy showed up, and just the look on their faces of, how did you know how to do that? It's like, well, I was trained at one point, and, you know, I've been exposed to certain things in my life that me freaking out and me not doing anything is not going to help this lady today. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say I saved her life, but a 70% plan now was better than a 100% plan later.
Yeah, absolutely. So
and then shockingly enough, 2 weeks prior to this injury here, I was leaving a convenience store. I literally watched a lady in a wheelchair try crossing a main road, and she gets ran over by a Cadillac Escalade. And so I, same thing, grabbed my team kit. I went over, had to stabilize her neck, and she actually had a skull fracture above her left eye where I could see directly in. I could see her brain because of her skull fracture. Was able to, thankfully, had my radio on me, rogered up for assistance and medics. We were able to get her life flighted out within 7 minutes, and she ended up surviving. So, again, just being able to train with, and I still revert back to, you know, 2010, 2011, and 12, when, one, I was exposed to a lot of bad things, and then learning all these other things with, you know, within MARSOC, it still helps me in act accordingly when I have to in very bad situations today.
Well, you know, one of the things that in talking to a lot of guys, and you probably have this feeling that you were given a gift of life by Lance Corporal Griffin and all the guys who worked on you from the moment the docs were there to the flight to the surgeons. You were given a gift. And I kind of hear in these stories that you're returning the gift to others, whether it be just an accident that you see happen or as part of your current situation where you're working for a three-letter agency we're not going to talk about. But, you know, you it sounds like you are, and I hope you are living life, living the gift that you were given and being able to return it. I think that's wonderful.
Thank you, sir. And I love that you see it that way. And then on my side, I've never thought of it that way either. I just have always thought, like, hey, someone's in trouble, go help.
And absolutely, yeah.
Whether that, like, when I worked on the streets locally, like, dealing with, you know, violent domestics or shootings or, you know, child cases, you always just kind of, like, you want to help because now having three kids, like, if I'm not around and, God forbid, my wife and my three kids get in a car accident, I would hope somebody was in the wrong place at the right time to be able to help and, you know, beat the 911 call, to beat the dispatchers trying to get cops and medics out to that area. I would hope somebody would do the same thing. And that's kind of what goes through my head. And again, just unlucky and lucky, like unlucky I was T-boned and was still able to help somebody. And then unlucky, I was literally leaving a convenience store. I was getting a monster because I was just starting my shift and you know, saw this. And I'm like, again, just wrong place, right time. But for that person, it was right place, right time. And, you know,
well, as I say, it's returning the gift. And what goes through your mind is I hope somebody returns the gift to my family if it's ever in need. And some call it karma, whatever you want to call it. But it certainly is a gift of life and extremely important. I really want to thank Rich Costanga for coming on today, getting out of his comfort zone, talking to Veterans Radio, talking about his experience in the Marines and MARSOC and what they do and how they train to that next level, and giving our Veteran Radio listeners some insight into all of this. Rich, thanks for taking a little time away from the family today to talk to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me on, sir.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Press Corps Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. And the Veterans Lending Council, which advises lenders, realtors, buyers about VA Home Loan Program, and you can find them on Facebook. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.